It's time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Habgood.
For BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.
Hello and welcome to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich to celebrate the 150th anniversary of BF Goodrich. Get up to $150 cash back when you purchase four or more passenger or SUV tyres. Aaron Habgood and Patrick Dangerfield joining you as always to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning, Redmond.
Welcome back, Patrick. It's it's nice to not be on a computer screen, to be honest with you.
How much easier is it doing radio?
And our
COVID safe. And our wonderful producer, Joel Brooks, who's done an incredible job piecing together the show each and every week. But when it's from different locations, it's over the phone at different stages, it's using mics plugged in into computers. This is a fair bit more enjoyable, a fair bit more fun. So let's get straight into it. And
I think Brooks is going to be very pleased putting this one together.
And your week in fishing.
It's been a cracking week with temperature and fish, Pat. It's really starting to heat up. And I know, let's just say you've walked back into Victoria in the easiest part that we've experienced for the last dozen months.
Easiest, mate. I am that sick of where I am.
Oh, don't even start the rubbish.
I'm not joking.
This will be good.
It's been 5 days or whatever it's been, a week, and I am so sick of wearing a mask. And I can't complain to anyone because you poor buggers have been doing it for 5 months. Jeez, it's annoying.
It is ridiculous.
It is so annoying.
Pat, you've been able to... I know you've been in a hub up there, but at least you could go for a fish up there. Like, Melburnians haven't even been able to leave their house for 5 kilometres for a period of time.
Well, you should have done the right thing, like beautiful WA, SA, New South Wales, and, of course, myself, a Queenslander now.
You can actually go back there, to be honest with you. No, back to the fishing, because you're annoying me with that comment. It's been good. The snapper is starting to fire up.
Victorians.
The snapper, would you trade the Gold Coast next year? I'll be your manager.
I tell you what, I reckon there'll be a few extra that'll go to the Gold Coast from now on, because after spending time up there, it's like, you know what? Bugger the winter. Winter up there is 23.
Melbourne's beautiful. Do you know those movies that like they go back to like a place that's been like deserted for 20 years? Melbourne's going to be that in the next 6 months, probably.
Mate, I'm not joking. When I came into the airport, I thought it was like a scene out of The Walking Dead.
Oh, there'd be no one there.
There was no one there, and there was a few police. That's it. It was a ghost town. It was really morbid. It's quite concerning.
What? How did you fly into? Like, obviously with a plane, but you fly in. Did you have to do anything COVID wise? Like,
you sort of say where you're going, all the almost whatever it is, border security, police are there. They had like semi-automatic machine guns. George is destructive. It is not that bad.
He's got a T-Rex with him.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point. We did travel with a few T-Rexes and dinosaurs.
Well, you've come back in the brightest part, of COVID that we've had experience for a period of time now, Pat. And like I said, snapper have heated up in the bay. They are starting to really kick off. Clifton Springs area in Port Phillip Bay firing, Western Port firing, top of Altona we spoke about last week firing. I'm going to do a bit more looking around the bottom, sort of like Carrum, Mornington area, Frankston in the next couple of days to week. I'll have a look through there.
And you're still being really mindful of the tides, like that's obviously when you're picking your times to go out. It's not dawn or dusk.
It's pretty much sunrise sunset for me. It's snappers sunrise sunset. And Pat, you have generally, we'll talk on an average day, you have 4 tides in a day, so you quite often can get a tide around that dark period of time, which gives you 2 bite times. Which, for example, if it's at 6 o'clock, the tide, that's a bite time, and then you've got the sun falling too, which is a bite time. And also, if you've got a tide at 8:30 in the morning, you get there at sunrise or just before you fish that bite time, then you've got the tide at, what I said, 8:30, that's another bite time. And snapper's on everyone's minds. One thing I'm a little bit, I really don't enjoy eating snapper. I honestly don't. I'm not sure about you. It's not, I release most of my fish. I get a couple of fish I usually keep because I do have friends and family who really enjoy eating it. Like, I keep a lot of whiting, but I eat it 3 days a week and I share it with family and friends. But eating-wise on the snapper, the bigger they get, they're not as good as the smaller ones. Do you find that too?
Well, that's always been my reason why I don't like catching those really big snappers. Like, no, I far prefer a 47.
That's because you can't catch a big one.
It's actually, well, that part is true. But what is also true is that I
strongly believe a 40 centimetre snapper is 10 times better tasting
it is.
Than a 70 or 80 centimetre.
I don't enjoy it. The only time I sort of eat a snapper is more when you have an event, I guess you could say, which we haven't done for a long time. But if you have
mean?
A...
You're angry and you're... snapper.
Well, you get 10 people together, you can put a 5 kilo snapper on the table and everyone can pick at it.
Gotcha. Yeah, that is beautiful.
But
yep.
I tend to eat the chips with the Doritos and the cabana next to it. But
now, I've always been one to wrap it in foil and bake it.
Yeah. And then what you do, little tip at the end of it, is when you wrap it in the foil, take it off for the last 5 minutes either side and it will crisp up the skin on the outside. It's a good little cooking tip there.
One of the questions that we continue to be asked about in regards to game fish and tuna, when are they going to start making their way down? We've seen them spasmodically along the New South Wales seaboard. Obviously, it's November's a hit and miss month when it comes to game fish up there. When are we likely to see those fish? Because we strongly believe they're here all year round, Redmond. But in terms of really good numbers, what temperatures are we waiting for before we get a report from Gwayne Blake saying, you know, they're out the head of they're you know close to Western Port or whatever it might be?
That question is, I don't think really anyone's going to know that answer for, to be honest with you. We're going to see Portland down the bottom end of the southwest corner of Victoria. That's going to start firing up with your school bluefin, and they are terrific school bluefin. I'm not talking 5 to 8 kilo little jelly bean. I'm talking 30 plus kilo, and they're going to be mixed in with the kingfish around that Portland North Shore area. They'll sort of happen... No, it's not far away, to be honest with you. It's literally December. You're going to start seeing the captures of that. Around the bottom end of Port Phillip Bay heads into Western Port heads, outside of there, Gwayne will start targeting the kingfish pretty soon, I imagine. And once that water temp gets... In the ocean, the water's still quite cold. We haven't had the currents run down yet. So we're only talking 14 in the ocean. Once that gets up above 17, 18, Gwayne will be out there searching for his kingfish.
I'm looking forward to having Gwayne on...
Next week.
Every second week. Mm. Yep. So he's going to start to give us reports ongoing for the rest of... I was about to say the rest of the year. There's not too much of the year left. But ongoing into next year...
I can't
year,
wait till this year's done.
Gwayne is joining us every second week to give us reports from right around Victoria, which is great to see.
Yep, and those tuna that arrived outside of the Port Phillip Bay heads last year, and don't get me wrong, we have caught tuna here for a long time. I charter fished years ago and we have the odd bluefin turn up. But one thing that I know, those tuna that you've got out the front of your house off out of areas there, Pat, down that way, it's you get spasmodic schools that come down and get them, but last year was different. It was tuna in plague proportions. I'm talking just footy fields of tuna just everywhere you drove. Yes, they were hard times to attempt to eat, but you could still get them. So it's depend what... I've got no idea what's going to happen on that front, if that was sort of where you're directing that question. But up the New South Wales coast, Pat, the marlin, they're starting to see some fish being caught up along the coast there. And I think it's out top of sort of Coffs Harbour up that way. And there, once the currents form, the up-dwelling, the down-dwelling start to sort it out properly with all the nutrients that get pushed up, you're going to start to see the marlin increase more and more. And you're looking at sort of that Christmas period time. I think a lot of people are going to be targeting the marlin this year to get out of Vic. But it's going to be a cracking marlin season, I'm hoping, with just... I'm just looking... That's me thinking positive. So last year was good. And if we follow the moon patterns and the water temperature by using rip charts, and I've reviewed it over the past years of doing this show, rip charts is a fantastic platform to get exactly what you need to find the marlin up the New South Wales coast. And there's a few yellowfin tuna kicking about at the moment. I know a couple, I think it was down at Eden, there was a couple caught, and up at Bateman Bay, there was a couple of yellowfins caught. And don't get me wrong, there might be the odd bluefin out there as well. So it's everything's going to start to really kick into gear in the next month or so regarding game fishing, tuna at Portland, kingfish outside Port Phillip Bay heads, and also down at Marlow Way too, East Gippsland, where the fire-affected areas and COVID, we need to get down there as well. I know you and I are planning to head down there very, very soon in the next couple of weeks. We're going to head down there, and the gummy sharks off Lake's entrance, the snapper down at Port Welshpool. You've got Inverloch, which is on the other side of Western Port as well. I know that's not fire affected as much, but it's another great place to go and target big, big snapper. So exciting few months ahead to come, Pat, for on the fishing front.
That is your week in fishing. Into a bit of fishing and boating news now. Seven, the maker of the world's most powerful outboard engine, is set to close.
Seven Marine.
Yep. So we spoke about this it'd be a couple of years ago now when Volvo Penta acquired Seven Marine. And there's been a media release basically stipulating that it no longer fits within their strategy of creating environmentally sustainable engines for marine applications. That was the, I suppose, the release. And I found it somewhat peculiar because I could have told you that, and I don't know, you know, it clearly as much as what they
You're not do. A scientist.
But when it comes to environmentally efficient engines, that was never ever Seven Marine's, you know, one would. It was about building the biggest outboards you could possibly imagine to make boats go as fast as they possibly could. So a huge investment initially by Volvo Penta, which we thought they were going to head in that outboard engine development realm. It's clearly been put on hold. Volvo Penta had this to say. Volvo Penta will stop sales and marketing of Seven Marine engines from January 1, 2021, as well as phasing out production once customer demand is met. That was posted to their website, the Swedish company's website. They did, however, say they'll continue to support the current outboard customers, providing full warranties and parts responsible for the products that are out on the field at the moment. So if anyone's actually bought a Seven outboard, then they'll continue to service it. It is an interesting play, though, after spending a huge amount of money on it. Looking, we thought, yep, this is where Volvo Penta is going to go. The bigger boats are getting and people are more inclined to, particularly in the US, but it's starting to come out to Australia as well, they're inclined to, you know, power them with outboards. Clearly, it's not the way that Volvo is going to go. So a huge investment that has gone up in smoke. You just wonder how much influence COVID has had over that, Redmond, and whether it's going to be ongoing. It's just shut it down for a few years and then, you know, look to
build it up. Well, it says put on hold. So put on hold. It'll be interesting to see what they actually do because they're trying to have emission-free by 2050, I'm pretty sure it says in that article as well. So,
and they've gone out, like I was reading the other day about their cars and they're talking about diesel engines and they're going to cease all manufacturing of diesel engines after 2021 or might be 2022, but because they're going to the hybrid model of petrol hybrid, cheaper to run, and obviously easier to, in terms of the compatibility with the hybrid engine. So it'll be interesting to see where the marine industry goes as we continue to, you know, adopt more eco-friendly technologies.
I'd love it if they designed an engine that ran off water.
Oh, hydrogen.
It'd be so much cheaper for me. Imagine that, just you tap out the front and just fill it up and
we've got a huge show of Real Adventures coming your way. Make sure you're joining the conversation. Download our free app that is available on the App Store for your chance to win a Dometic CFX3 ice maker model. They're an absolute,
I think we've got seven or eight left, I think.
We do. So send in your questions. And each and every week we are giving away one. Up next, Stephen Napoli joins us from Able Fishing Charters. We're also going to talk a bit about, a few weeks ago, Redmond, you can find this in the App Store for all our podcast shows. We talked about, do we need more launching facilities or do we need to update some of the facilities that we've got? Steve's got a view on that as well. Up next, The Social Club. You're listening to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich. And don't forget to download the new Real Adventures app. It has all our latest podcasts, fishing news, tips, and recipes.
You're listening to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.
Welcome back to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years. It's time for The Social Club. If you've got a question for Aaron or I, make sure you shoot us in, and better yet, download our Real Adventures app, ask a question, and you could win a Dometic CFX3 ice maker model. We're giving away one every week right up until Christmas, and one of the next three questions will be a winner.
When we announce the winner, I want you, with the excitement of your welcome back at the start then. Your welcome back then was very exciteful.
Well, I'm excited, mate. I'm excited to be back.
That's how you're going to announce the winner.
And seeing you and being able to sort of talk to your face.
You're only happy because I dropped your fish off. That's the only reason.
And that, you know, that's all part of it. First question is from Jonathan Escott. With the chaos of snapper season, do you find sounding away from the boat traffic would give a better chance of landing fish?
Great question. That's a really good question, because the amount of boats that have been fishing on top of each other up at Black Rock and that marine park incident, like I'm talking, Pat, hundreds and hundreds of boats on top of each other. Like, you can't even cast a line out. And yes, they were all catching fish. A lot of them were catching fish. But you won't see me there. You will not see me there. Go to an area, put your sounder on, and start looking. The fish don't sit in one spot. There's so many artificial dumps out there from fisheries. There's also ones that people have put there themselves. There are hundreds of them out there.
You can't say that. You'd be shocked.
There's lots out there. If you can use your sounder and find structure, fish will always end up coming back to structure. And it's about using your equipment to the best ability it has.
Best benefit
to,
you. Yep.
To benefit yourself. And don't get me wrong, you'll find fish on the mud on your sonar that you'll mark them up, and they'll have some of the best sessions you'll find. But you need to utilize your equipment. I can't harp on it enough, because if you don't use that, you're fishing blind, let's be honest. I can see what's pretty much under my boat. It's just like, I don't know, it's just people. I know so many people that just go out there and throw an anchor out because they've seen a pack of boats. Those boats might be on top of that fish. That's the three boats might have the fish behind them, but you're 20 meters to the other side of them and there's going to be no snapper there. So fish, use your sounder. If you're on the mud, mark up two or three fish and you'll be surprised that there's a whole school could be there. Do a couple of passes over that area and you'll be shocked. A little bit of burley. I don't burley a lot, but a little bit. If you can find structure, now a good way to talk about that, Pat, is you might head out and do the groundwork of sounding on the mud to find fish. You've got a mark where you know that there's structure there that you might have sounded over, or you might have given 20 minutes. You marked up fish, they didn't go. You move off it for the mud to have a look for some fish. You might find some fish. If they don't go, just before sunset, head back to that structure, because they might go as that sun goes down. So I can't harp enough about structure. It's a great place to fish, because fish will always go to structure at some point. But the mud is also a place to start looking. And like I said, away from boats is definitely my answer. I don't like fishing where there's too many boats on top of each other. The next question is for yourself, Patrick, from Gary. Are self-draining decks a no-brainer, or is there more than meets the eye?
Well, they're a no-brainer if you like keeping things clean, but you're not necessarily worried about falling out of your boat if you're fishing in the southern seas. We've actually been asked this question a fair bit, because I suppose if you've never been into fishing and you see a boat that if water comes on the deck, it just washes straight off, well, why wouldn't you choose that above a boat that everything drains into the underfloor catchment? The reason is...
Which is mine's full of pippies right now.
The reason is the depth of which you're able to fish if you don't have a self-draining deck. So you're able to... You obviously sit lower in the boat, but what it means is it's certainly safer, especially when you're chasing those really big fish in the southern seas, Redmond, where the, you know, let's be honest, the swell can change in a matter of minutes, and the conditions can change really quickly. So it's certainly safer fishing from a boat where the center of gravity is lower because the deck height is lower.
Yeah, like you said, and it comes down to your boats as well, what style of boat you have too. Like,
because majority of plate boats have self-draining decks.
Yeah, and also you've at the height you're sitting as well. I know there's certain measurements you got to have self-draining decks and the likes, but like I worked on a 36 foot Stebbercraft, and I worked on one of them for a long time, and they're a beautiful boat, and that was a self-draining deck as my charter boat. It just made sense, but the drama with it was, like, it was along the sides too. The scuppers are along the sides.
Yeah.
Water just constantly coming in and saturating you is a pain in the backside. But for the charter purpose, lore as well, it was required and you sort of needed it. But for my boat, my little 6 meter
north. If it's lore, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's lore. Well, does it? But it's for my little 6 meter, I'm not going to put that in the boat. I'm not going to put self-draining deck in the boat. I've got a big enough bilge pump that pumps so many liters out in a minute. But
I had the same option with the 750. You can go.
What'd you do?
No, I didn't do it.
Yeah, you didn't.
Not for where we fish down here.
No, I don't think it's... Bigger boats and marlin boats and the likes, you're 100%, you're copping a lot of water. Even little, you're not going to be backing up into little... We're going to talk about that, actually. Let's talk about that next, backing up into a little bit of slop pat. We'll cover that. But, yeah, it depends on the style of fishing, the boat you have, and what you do.
It's almost like you've read the rundown talking about just driving back into swell. Travis Corner. Boys, love the podcast. When using twin hook snelled rig for snapper, do you use circle or J hooks?
I use circle hooks all the time. J hooks are designed to kill as such. Circle hooks are more designed to conserve regarding where the fish gets hooked. J hook can hook them anywhere in the guts, whereas circle hook goes down in its mouth, comes out, rolls into the corner of the jaw most of the time. Doesn't happen every time, but it happens a lot of the time. But
what about hooking up your fish? What's a greater chance, or are they much for a much worse?
I very rarely miss fish. I have a direct contact with braid. I don't use mono in the bay. Mono, I can't stand. It's nearly up there with my favorite color for a squid jig. But you don't get me wrong. There's probably 80. What's that?
Spoiler alert: Aaron doesn't prefer any color when it comes to squid jigs.
No, I don't. I haven't had the same one on for the last few months, and I've caught lots of squid. Anyway, we won't talk about that. It's a soft spot, but it's I've used circle hooks. Oh, to be honest with you, it's probably 50-50 on circles versus J's. The charter boats use J's. A lot of them do. I use circles. You can use whatever you prefer and whatever you have the most success with. But the Gamma 6-0 circle for me, if I was using a straight, I'd probably drop down to a size 4 to do with the size a 4-0 to do with the size of the gape of the hook. So for a circle hook, for example, it obviously rolls in on itself, Pat. So you lose a little bit of the gape there. Hence why I go to a 6-0 circle. You can even go up to a 7-0 if you're trying to get bigger fish. But it's quite a big jump from a 6-0 gamma to a 7-0 in the size itself. So 6-0s are definitely the prime size for me. And with just a normal J hook, for example, I'd be going 4-0, maximum 5-0, because you can just pin them rather than, you don't need a 6-0 because they're just getting real big and the gape's massive on them. Depends what size fish you want to catch.
You know what Travis has just done?
What's
that? He's just won himself a Dometic Surf X 3 Ice Maker model. I'll tell you what, the missus is going to be happy. It's,
you like that question?
Nearly $1,600 worth of fridge.
Just because you got Mike 1 now, I don't mean you choose who wins.
How good is that? Congratulations, Travis. That is how easy it is, guys. Simply send in your questions to our Real Adventures Social Club via our Real Adventures app. So all you do is download it. It's free in the download store.
How does Travis get a hold of us?
He can just contact us through the app again.
Through the app, done.
And there we go. He's won himself a beautiful Dometic CFX 3. Now, when chasing down marlin in small trailer boats, Redmond, mm-hmm. What are the keys to driving your boat with the fish on, and where do you want to position the fighting angler, and where do you want to position the fish that's about 200 metres away from that fighting angler with a line that is just rearing through every swell in every direction imaginable. So we're chasing with small boats, big fish. What are the keys to driving your boat? Because let's be honest, you can't just sit there in the chair and just think, all right, I'm going to bring that fish in when it's soaring off a million miles an hour.
Marlin are quite a fast fish, and they can be next to you to being 300 meters from you in the matter of seconds. And it's about being on top of it. When live baiting, for example, so you're throwing a live bait into a bait ball, quite often you're already on top of the fish, Pat. So the fish is, let's be honest, the TV's there. The fish is only 3 or 4 metres behind you and you're throwing a bait to it and you're feeding it out. So you tend to be on that fish quicker. But when you're trawling a lure or a skip bait, and by the time you knock that boat out of gear and the marlin's running, that fish can be well over 150, 200 metres from you. And it's about getting that bow out of that line as quick as you possibly can. The more line out, the more chance of pulling hooks to do with drag pressure. So the more pressure on that line and the bow in the line, actually, you might have thought you set your, for example, a 24-kilo line, you might have thought you've set your drag pressure at 8 kilo, which you have, but the bloke behind you that did the drag pressure that pulled the line out was probably only 2 meters from you. So therefore, that line is 8 kilo from that distance. And the further you go out, you might end up having 10 or 11 kilo, which you can pop leaders, you pop main lines and the like. So you want to get on top of it as quick as you possibly can, because like I said, the bow in the line, you don't know where the fish is. It starts jumping, especially lure fishing. They'll throw lures out very easily. So you want to get prepared. Have your boys on the boat or the girls on the boat ready to go to bring those other rods in or whatever you're doing. Get on top of that fish. And I always fight the fish, any game fish, barrel, bluefin, tuna, marlin, the likes, with the person, the angler, on the driver's side of the boat. The reason for that is it gives me, as the driver, being on the right-hand side of the boat, on the starboard side, you can visually see where that line is and where that fish is. Where if he's on the other side, you can't see a lot. So you want to have him behind you in the corner there, braced in with his harness on or whatever he's doing in his gimbal, and you want to be fighting the fish, driving the boat with the fish as close to the boat the whole time as you possibly can. And that involves using your engine, chasing it up and down on it. Now, you're going to go down marlin fishing out of Eden like I do every year and have a fantastic time. You're going to see big game boats. They hook up and they're in reverse the whole time. Those engines they have are all designed to use power in reverse. They can spin the boats on the spot. Because two big engines most of the time, they can spin the boat in a circle and chase this marlin. And that marlin will be literally behind that boat no matter of 25 meters half the time, just literally just jumping out of the water, and they're just reversing up trying to get out as hard as they can. Where in a small trailer boat, you physically can't do that. You'll probably kill your engine and you're going to cop a lot of water on your head.
I was going to say, and you're just about drown yourself.
Legit. And it's funny watching these big charter, these big boats up there go, and they're pushing water and the anglers just wiping water off their heads. Oh, I'd be going forwards in it because I don't like getting wet. But but in this trailer boat, you want to position your boat so it's sort of side onto the fish, and you can swing him to the back and up on him, back up. It's about working the fish up, getting him close. But then when you get him up to the boat, that's when I'm using my reverse in a trailer boat. That's when I'm starting to swing my boat around using the bottom, using the engine to control. In reverse, you have a lot more control. You have a hell of a lot more control in reverse than you do in forwards. So by getting the boat, once the fish gets close, I then into reverse and I'm using that engine to tail that fish like those big boats, getting a little bit wet with a nice 15 knot northerly slop on it, and that fish will then give you the opportunity to grab the leader, then grab the bill of the fish, whether to get a photo or pop it off. So positioning yourself, your angler, fighting the boat, fighting the fish in gear, but tacking it down slowly, back and in forward and out in reverse slowly. Then when you get it up, just in reverse, not too hard, just controlling the angles of your boat to be allow the person on the leader to be able to have a shot at grabbing this fish.
This is Real Adventures for BF Goodrich. BF Goodrich's $150 cashback offer. Visit bfgoodrich.com.au for more info or to find your nearest participating dealership.
On Real Adventures, it's time to get all aboard for Dometic Mobile Living Made Easy.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for All Aboard for Dometic. Everything you need for adventures, big or small. Today's special guest is Stephen Napoli from Able Fishing Charters. G'day, Steve. Thanks for joining us on Real Adventures this morning.
No problems, guys. Thank you very much for having me on board.
Now, you are from Able Fishing Charters. Talk us through it, what you provide, the services that you offer.
So here at Able Charters, we're a small family-run business, and we like to get our families out onto the water. We offer our snapper, whiting, squid, flathead, and gummy charters. We operate two vessels, one out of Williamstown and the other out of Wyndham Harbour. We also do party cruises, scenic tours, spring racing carnivals that's just past us. So anything to do on the water, we'd like to get you out there and have a bit of fun.
Steve, fishing out of the top end of Port Phillip Bay is the ideal place to target some seriously big Port Phillip Bay snapper and have a great time with hopefully getting a few rods going at once. Next few months, hopefully restrictions ease a little bit more and you can have a few more people on your boat, but you're going to be heading out there searching for the snapper for the next few months. The areas you're going to be starting to look.
So for us, around Williamstown, Altona has been fairly consistent. If we want to venture a little bit further across the Black Rock, Ricketts Point has also been fairly good, but up our end of the bay, we'll start to find our biggest official come through Point Cook in the next month.
Point Cook, yep.
What about in terms of the guiding business with river cruises and that sort of thing? Talk us through the breakdown of fishing charters versus people just looking to go out and explore sort of Port Phillip Bay.
So we do get a a big influx of people and businesses that want to do their work breakups and stuff like that. When we take them out there, it's a bit of an eye-opener to them to go through the heart of the city, under the West Gate, under the Balti, into the city and up the Yarra. They don't get to see the waterway and the landmarks from the water. So to give them that opportunity is a big bonus to most Melbourne and Victorians to see all our landmarks from the water side of things.
I tell you what, Steve, I'm looking at a picture here on your social media page, and that spread of everything, I'll call it.
Chips, cheeses, lunches.
And the Eskies look full at the back because the lid's not sitting on well. I think this is the place to go in a couple of months. I think when that sun comes out a little bit more.
Definitely, matey. We do a full catering package from your full range of cold seafood to your hot eye fillet steaks. So the world's your oyster out here with us.
Steve, over the past, couple of weeks since the restrictions have eased and Melbourne started to travel, we're going to see facilities around the whole of Victoria, everywhere you go, are going to be quite busy and full with people trying to launch their boats and head out for a fish. We've seen some disappointing scenes right along from Altona boat ramp right through to Carrum into St Kilda Marina of arguments and the likes and the frustration of launching your boat with 2 hour waits and the likes. Would like to hear you obviously living up there, see it a lot more than myself down the bottom end of Port Phillip Bay. Just want to hear your opinion on it and how the problem could be fixed.
Yeah, it's progressively gotten worse over the years, and it's got to the point now where tensions have flared and we are seeing violence at the ramps, and no one wants to see that. We're all out there to have a bit of fun and go fishing, but we've got these beautiful little areas along Williamstown, the old BAE system, warehouses that are no longer operational. There's about 5-6 sheds there, but right at the entrance to Jellybrand coming out of Williamstown, it's sheltered, it's covered. There would have to be at least room for 3,000 odd boats there. I can't see why we can't open this up to the public and have the opportunity to use it and for the government to get something back from it. Even if there is a small launching fee or something there for parking, at least it's another avenue to get out there.
So
ease the congestion at all these ramps would be ideal.
So you reckon don't particularly put more ramps as such in. It's more
invest in
more ramps and the quality of them.
Yeah, that's correct. So the facilities are there at the moment with most of our ramps, but we need more ramps. Point Cook along the coastal line heading west. We've still got plenty of spaces in between Wyndham Harbour, Campbell's Cove, Point Cook, coming back along the Altona foreshore. There's opportunities to put more ramps in.
With Target 1 million being on fisheries' mind for the past few years and obviously in the future years to come, it's only going to get busier and busier, and especially with social media as well, Pat, and it's just going to continue to grow fishing, which is a great thing. But if the facilities can't facilitate it, then you're going to have literally World War II at each ramp, and it's going to happen more and more.
We are. Steve, before we let you go, just talk us through. It's obviously been an incredibly difficult year for family-run and local businesses right around Australia. How has COVID impacted you? It must be wonderful just to be back on the water now.
Yeah, look, it's a large weight off the shoulders to be able to earn an income. We've got 3 young kids under 6 and a wife that can only work 1 to 2 days a week as she's got to look after the kids. So I am the sole breadwinner for the family, and makes it very hard to look people in the eye and say, okay, we might not be able to make this payment this week or we might not be able to make another one. We weren't able to get any assistance from JobKeeper or JobSeeker or anything like that. So the strain has definitely been real. And, yeah, can't thank people enough for staying true, getting back out on the water and coming back out with Able Charters.
So if people do want to get in contact with you at Able Fishing Charters, what's the number and what's the website, Steve?
Give yourself a plug, Steve. Go for it.
So it's ablefishingcharters.com. You can look us up on Facebook as well under Able Charters. Our phone number is 9502-3777, or you can give me a call direct on 0401-366-513.
And how many does your boat facilitate normally and now with COVID? So people can know.
18 people on one vessel and 10 on the other.
Yep.
And due to COVID, we can now take 10 on one and 6 on the other. Or if you'd like to book a river cruise, we can take up to 28 people. Then again, come down to COVID and we can only take 10.
Well, get a group of 10 people together and go catch some snapper, I think, Pat.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you very much for joining us on Real Adventures this morning, Steve, from Able Fishing Charters.
No problems, guys. Thank you very much for having me.
It's now time for Red's Review. And, Patrick, I know that you got a set for your birthday a few years ago of these, and I just want to ask you a question. Where are your binoculars?
Look, the fact is I moved house and I'm not exactly sure where they are. So my wife spent a lot of money on binoculars.
I hope you can find them.
They're somewhere around the shed. But quickly, when choosing marine binoculars, there's a few things that we think are really, really important. Fog-proof and waterproof features are quite critical if you're going to use this for a marine application. When it comes to binoculars, the price variation, Redmond, is obviously going to change significantly. But one thing that is really quite important when it comes to buying a pair that is fog-proof is making sure that it's been dry nitrogen gas charged, which means it just stops the fogging. Because of the difference in conditions that you'll get, whether you've left them on the dash and all of a sudden there's a bit of moisture around there and then you're fishing in 40-degree temperature the next day, the variance in temperature is generally what causes the fogging. So that's an important part of any quality pair of binoculars. It also will help with corrosion because of the sealing mechanisms that need to be in place for it. Magnification is a really important one as well. High magnification is fantastic, but one of the challenges you'll get, if it is too high, then you're going to struggle to stabilize your images, especially when you're at sea, because it's so far away. And when the boat's moving up and down, it can sometimes provide a bit of an issue. So if you can get binoculars with an image stabilizer built in, it's highly recommended.
On a boat, it makes sense.
Yep. They are a lot more expensive, but if you're happy to spend the money, it is something that's worth looking at. Generally, x7 magnification is sort of what most really good binoculars will have. Generally, most binoculars anyway, but it's a bit like comparing iPhones to Androids. You know, Androids will come out and say there's a 108 megapixel camera. iPhones will say, well, there's 12 megapixel camera. There's very little difference. It's just in the mechanisms that they actually use. When it comes to the different binoculars, and we've done a little bit of research around ones that we like, at the lower range of something that's still really quite capable, the Bushnell H2O binoculars we really like. Once again, x7 magnification.
How much are they?
Just under $300.
Yep.
So it's one that we really like. Pushing up a little bit, the Fujinon, which is a great brand when it comes to binoculars. The WPC XL Mariner we really like at $400. And then at the upper echelon, even though it's still not the $3,500 that these binoculars can go into, and this is what I bought these from Camera House. They're about $850. The Steiner Navigator Pro with compass binoculars built in.
Do you think that it's a need on a boat, binoculars, Pat? Your thoughts on that?
Oh, no doubt it is. No doubt. And especially if you're going to game fish, which obviously you do a fair bit of, you need to be able to spot birds. You need to be able to spot fish.
Spot your mate catching whiting down the bay behind you.
Spot your mate catching whiting. And it's a good investment.
That was Red's Review. We'll see you after the break.
You're listening to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.
Welcome back to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years. It's time for Red's Tip.
I spent a few days during the week getting the boat organised because I only picked it up a little time ago and I just got straight into fishing, but bloody hell, I was unorganised. Where's your D hooker? Where's your chute? Where's this? I don't know. It was like fishing on someone else's boat, and that was the reason I needed my boat back, because a boat, because organisation. And even sinkers, I left a body sinkers at home the other day offshore. I had to put two ounces on to make a 4 ounce to get me down. So,
and you hate being disorganized.
The only place I am organized is on a boat, nowhere else. but just getting organized, and I needed to get a new rocket flare because it was my one. I actually don't know where that's gone, and I had to pick up a new extinguisher because, as the copper says,
you're having a go about me losing my binoculars and you've lost your rocket
boats. Pat, I've been on 64 different boats in the past 6 months. I don't know which boat it's on. Someone scored a $90 rocket flare. But you've lost me. I had a little joke coming there, but I forgot what I was going to say.
Good.
Funny. No, me joke. It is funny. Watercop pulled my mate over and he goes to me, he's like, on your fire extinguisher, it's got to be in the green, as they call it, not in the outside red. And that's how you tell on the gauge, the pressure gauge. I think I might have even said this joke before. And he, it's not a joke, it's true, but it's funny. The copper said to him, he goes, oh, mate, your fire extinguisher's done. He goes, oh, mate, it's on the line. Like, it's on the green on the line. The copper said to him, mate, you're not playing tennis. Not bad, is it? It actually, that's not a joke. That was true. So
I like it.
He let him off with a warning because he was a good bloke. And you've got a new extinguishers. But anyway, get a safety bag. That's my tip. Get a safety bag. And what I mean by that is just everything together. Put it under the seat. In the North Bank, I've got a ripping cabin. So, and storage. I've got two bunks on each side. And also, I've got other seats that lift up and put storage in there too. Get a safety bag. Everything is in the bag. Because when that copper comes up to you and says to you, mate, you got your safety gear? You can pull your bag out and just pass it to him.
Yep.
You're not looking for a torch, which you've had out looking at you have two torches, one at the back deck that you use to find things if you need to. Most boats have lights, but I know how many times people go into the cabin, pull their torch out, leave it down the side. Water gets into it, it corrodes it, and it wrecks it. You leave it in a waterproof safe bag in the cabin, you're going to have everything together. The only thing that I wouldn't have in there is my EPIRB, which sits, I've got it on the passenger side, on their legs there. It's actually built into the side of the North Bank in the side there, where it has a brace where it sits in. And my fire extinguisher is also mounted on my side of the side, up the front. So they're the only two things that I won't have in there, just because if you need them, you need them. Where your flares, having them organized, grab the bag and bang, you're away. Everything's unpacked and I've just got a lacquer band around them, Pat, just so I can... instead of trying to open a flares packet if I need them, I just pull it out of the lacquer band and away I go. So that there is Red's tip. Get a safety bag. Get organised.
It's time for the flying gaff. It's pretty simple this week. There's been a kayaker who has tried to paddle to South Australia to escape Victoria's coronavirus restrictions. Not only was he turned back home, he was also hit with a jail sentence.
Sentence?
He was. He was jailed for 9 days.
Really?
Yes, and then with a suspended sentence with a good behaviour bond, so suspended sentence.
I don't know what to say right now.
Don't try and skip the borders. That's about all you need.
23rd of November, we're allowed into New South. I'm excited, looking forward to that.
You've been listening to Real Adventures for BF Goodrich, celebrating 150 years.